good.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
A bit of sympathy. Forget your sympathy. That's all right with me. I was satisfied to drift along from day to day till they came and took my man away. Remember my forgotten man? You put a rifle in his hand. You sent him far away. You shouted, hip hooray. But look at him today. Remember my forgotten man. You had him cultivate the land. He walked behind a plow. The sweat fell from his brow. But look at him right now. And once he used to love me. I was happy then. He used to take care of me. Won't you bring him back again? 'Cause ever since the world began, a woman's got to have a man. Forgetting him, you see, means you're forgetting me. Like my forgotten man.
Now there's an oldie for you. The Forgotten Man, that's Joan Blondell singing it. It came from a movie back in the 1930s, I think 1933. Good morning, welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy, Big Ed Davis, thank you for joining us. It is Labor Day weekend. That's why we played that song, by the way. The Forgotten Man, the employee, the hardworking family man. Thank you for joining us, though. It's Friday, September the 1st. We got a lot going on before the weekend begins. In a few minutes, Sean Higgins of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, he's going to join us. We are going to talk about the forgotten history of the National Labor Relations Act, speaking of Labor Day, and how the act gave workers the right to either join or not join a union. So stay tuned for that just a few minutes. And newly released documents show a tight relationship between then Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter's private business dealing, to the point of Joe using fake email names to cover the relationship. We're going to take a look at that as well. And do you remember the debates? Do you remember when Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida referred to an abortion survivor during the debates? And then all these detractors said there was no such person, called it fake? Well, that abortion survivor has come forward. We're going to talk about that as well. And in our ultimate top 10 to celebrate Labor Day, the top 10 largest unions in America towards the end of the show. So stay tuned for that as well. By the way, Freedom Works, sponsored by Andrew's Master Barbershop, for the best haircut in Tampa Bay, you guys, I'm telling you, it's got to be Andrew's Master Barbershop. Take a drive over to Dunedin. He's in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 on Overcash Drive. They're open Tuesdays through Saturdays. Call first for your appointment, 727-733-3773. And any damage, tree damage at all from this latest hurricane? Well, ArborLife Tree Service is the ones to call. They are terrific in cleaning up any kind of tree damage, whether it's a complete tree removal, branches, whatever it is. ArborLife is Tampa Bay's premier tree service. Call them today for a free estimate. They'll get over to you right away. But call for a free estimate first, 727-330-1999, ArborLife Tree Service. All right, so the August job report numbers have come out, and U.S. job growth continues to go at what's called a moderate pace in the month of August. The unemployment rate jumped up to 3.8%, which is a sign that the labor market is cooling a bit. And it also marks a nod towards rising interest rates and chronic inflation. Now, employers added about 187,000 jobs in August. That's according to the Labor Department. At the same time, in a separate report based on a survey of households, slightly different picture of the labor market. It shows the unemployment rate now at 3.8%. It had been at 3.5%, even though the labor force rate rose last month. Now, it marked the highest jobless rate since February of 2022. So things are cooling off a little bit. Apparently, the Fed is watching the report to see whether or not they're going to bump up interest rates on us again. I don't want them to. I think they should leave well enough. In fact, I don't think that the Fed should be involved in playing games with numbers at all. I think we should allow the free market to set rates. I think with all the back and forth with the Federal Reserve, by the time everything settles down, the free market has got a much better handle on doing the right thing and responding even quicker than the Fed might respond. Anyway, want to talk before we go to our break about health issues among some of our politicians. I don't know if you saw this, but Mitch McConnell had another freeze the other day where he stopped talking and just was staring straight out. And it was kind of scary. This is the second time it's happened to him. Apparently, President Biden spoke to McConnell. And he said that Biden said that McConnell, quote, sounded like his old self again when they spoke on the phone yesterday. Now, it was Wednesday when McConnell was standing there, and he was asked about whether he was planning on running again, and he froze. And apparently for about 30 seconds, he just stared straight ahead. It's kind of scary. Apparently, he had a concussion, which might be one of the reasons that he's having these bouts of what I would call freeze frame. But it's raising question about his health, his age. And we've already got Biden himself, obviously, McConnell. You know, these people are both in their 80s now.
Did you see Biden's response?
What was his response?
His response was,
who's Mitch McConnell? Okay. Yeah, this is, you have to see this one, okay?
Huh?
It doesn't work too much on radio. Oh, my. And then we got Dianne Feinstein. She's 90 years old.
Don't forget Fetterman, too.
Do you realize that Feinstein is 90 years old? Mm-hmm. Is she the oldest person that's ever served? No, she's not, by the way.
I think you said 94 or something like that.
There was was it South Carolina or North Carolina? He used to belong to the Ku Klux Klan, by the way, and now I got to think of his name. But he served into his 90s, and I cannot think of his name. Anyway, so all kinds of questions are coming up again, but I wouldn't rely on Joe Biden to give us a health report on Mitch McConnell, other than he can possibly empathize with him, all right? But here's what he said. I spoke to Mitch. He's a friend, and I spoke to him today, which was yesterday. He says, and you know, he's his old self on the telephone. I'll say one thing about McConnell. When he's not freezing, he sounds fine. The problem with Biden is he doesn't sound fine no matter what's going on anymore. You know, he just...
I just can't believe...
we have too many old people that are running around Washington, right?
And Fetterman, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's another one. But another that's case. Not an age issue. That's just...
No, I know. But
that's another problem. But you're right. We've got a lot of people that, frankly, are not capable of doing the job right now, and people should realize it, and we should... I don't think we should tolerate it. You know, our government's too important. Anyway, let's take our break. Since this is Labor Day, we're delighted to have Sean Higgins. He's going to join us. We're going to talk about the forgotten history of the National Labor Relations Act.
Is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
Do you have fallen trees or damage from Hurricane Idalia? Call ArborLife Tree Service at 727-330-1999. We are a veteran-owned Florida business with an ISA-certified arborist on site to handle your tree needs. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. We are licensed, insured, and have the manpower to come to your rescue today. No job too big or too small. Call us now at 727-330-1999. That's 727-330-1999. Your trees will thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on a Labor Day weekend, which is about to start, and I'm delighted to have Sean Higgins, an old buddy, join us from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, where he is a research fellow. By the way, he is the author of a report, The Recent History of the Wagner Act. We're going to talk a little bit about that. He's got an op-ed that's coming out, The Forgotten History of the National Labor Relations Act. Sean, welcome back to Freedom Works.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, thank you for being with us. Let's talk a little bit about the National Labor Relations Board and the NLRA, the National Labor Relations Act, because, like you say, people probably don't know exactly what it allows or does not allow. Could you talk a little bit about it and its history?
Yeah, it's the 1935 law. It was passed in the middle of the Great Depression. And it's the basic law that guarantees the collective bargaining rights for workers, in other words, the right to form a union if they want. It's actually the second law that we had. There's a previous one called the Railway Labor Act, which applies only to the transportation industry. But this one was passed as part of initially, there was another law called the National Industrial Recovery Act, which had a also guaranteed collective bargaining rights, but that was sort of, they kind of botched that one, and so then they went back to, and passed the National Labor Relations Act in order to sort of fix some of the problems with the previous one. And that's sort of what my piece delves into, the whole sort of history of how exactly this law was written and what the intention behind it was. And the intention was to give workers the right to bargain collectively, but to ensure that it's the workers themselves that were the ones directing this, and that if they had a union, it was because that was what they wanted, not what somebody was forcing upon them.
Indeed. You mentioned in your op-ed that we might be a little bit, mixed up or fooled a little bit by the way President Biden is talking about the National Labor Relations Act and the collective bargaining. Could you tell us a little bit about that and the fact that if you chose not to join a union, you had that right as well?
Well, that was, again, the intention of the law. What you often tend to see with people like Biden or a lot of organized labor leaders or their allies is the argument that the National Labor Relations Act doesn't just merely make the government a neutral arbiter, a sort of umpire when it comes to forming unions, but claims that the federal government's role is to encourage workers to be in unions. And this is basically the rationale for a lot of pro-union labor that's put forward. Well, the National Labor Relations Act says we should be encouraging unions, so let's do this thing which will result in more unions. And that basically comes from the fact that the word encouraging is actually in the text of the National Labor Relations Act. But the problem with that is it's taken out of context, usually. The word encouraging refers to the fact that at the time they passed the National Labor Relations Act, there was some really horrific violence going on nationally, riots and demonstrations and all these sort of old-fashioned things where you see people, protesters or picketers getting beaten with sticks and factories getting trashed and that type of stuff. This was the height of the Great Depression. People were angry. There was a lot of strife going on. And this resulted in a lot of industries just sort of being frozen at a time when the economy was trying to crawl its way back into normalcy. And so the argument was, well, if we have some unions, that'll be a way to sort of resolve some of this more extreme violence. So we'll support unions in those situations. And that was what was the congressional debate at the time. But in normal cases where the workers were just sort of trying to decide whether or not they thought that a union was better for them in terms of what they could bargain from their bosses, then in those cases the government was supposed to be neutral. And that's sort of where this confusion comes from. And a lot of people, and this is in fairness to some of the people like Biden and some of the others, a lot of the stuff has just literally been forgotten over the years because it's just not something people pay a whole lot of attention to, and so people just sort of tend to repeat the things that they've heard from other people say. I actually wrote the paper I did by sitting down and going through all 500 pages of the congressional debate on this.
Oh, my God.
It was every bit as scintillating as it sounds. But you learn a lot of interesting stuff when you do this.
I'll bet you did. Robert Wagner, and you mentioned this in your op-ed, the New York senator that basically wrote the law. He said that all this bill does, as far as I can see, is it leaves the worker a free man to organize or not to organize as he as he wishes.
Yes. And that was, he's the author, is known as the Wagner Act, the National Labor Relations Act. And this is what the author of it said, regarding his legislation. And the text of the legislation bears that out. Part of the issue here was that the previous law I talked about, where they sort of botched it, what happened was they said we'll have collective bargaining, workers can form unions. But they didn't set out a whole lot of rules as to what exactly those unions meant, which resulted in companies creating worker representation groups, basically company-run unions, and enticing all their workers to be members of these unions. In other words, if you worked for General Motors, you're suddenly a member of the General Motors Worker Representation Association, which was run by General Motors, which obviously is not going to do a whole lot to advance your interests because it's actually run by the company itself. And so the point of the National Labor Relations Act was to sort of prevent these type of situations and allow for situations where it was a worker-driven process where the workers formed a union. In other words, they weren't being pushed into it by some outside organization. So something that happened from the grassroots upward. And that's what's sort of been lost. I mean, because a lot of these efforts now are also trying to sort of basically force workers into unions.
Yeah.
And, a lot of these unions are just sort of long-existing organizations that the workers never had a hand in creating. And that's the sort of the issue we find ourselves in today.
We're talking with Sean Higgins. He is a research fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He's written a report, The Recent History of the Wagner Act. And we're talking about an op-ed that's coming out for Labor Day, The Forgotten History of the National Labor Relations Act. Back in the 30s, Sean, there was a lot of concern by a lot of people about communism and socialism. They had seen what had happened in Russia. Even way back then, I think there was concern that unions could be somewhat, the tag of being communistic was sometimes connected to it. And, not legitimately so, because most of the people just wanted to see workers get a fair deal. But there was a concern that, do we want the government to come in, or do we want a collective society, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the case. The process at the time was they wanted people to sort of have their own process in this and not do that. But they also, the unions were very specific about the fact that they did not want to sort of usurp the role of businesses. This was how they were, most of them were themselves professed to be anti-communist and said they were trying to restrain that sort of impulse within their own ranks, which can spur up by the nature of unions. But most of them said that, look, what we want to do is to be partners with management and represent the workers in that process, not to take over the company itself, which mm-hmm. is ultimately what communism is about.
Yeah, and again, unions were being formed at that time, especially because of the Depression and because of how tough it had been. It sort of came to a head during that period of time. And like you said, there was in the mid-30s, there was a lot of fighting that was going on. They were even rolling tanks down, I think, down Washington, the streets of Washington at one point.
In several cases, the National Guard were called in.
Yes,
strike. They got that bad. Yeah,
It got that bad. So, in overall, as you look at the National Labor Relations Act, is it a good thing? Has it done what it was intended to do?
I think overall it's a good thing. I mean, I wouldn't want to scrap the law entirely. I think it's ripe for some amendments to clarify some points on it. But certainly, I mean, workers have the right to collectively bargain and to get together and to form unions. I mean, I see that as an extension of the First Amendment and its right of association.
Right.
If you want to get together and, you know, to represent for your own interests, that's your right. And, you know, the only issue is whether or not this is, again, a grassroots worker-centered thing where the workers are themselves doing it. It's not a question of whether or not they're being prodded into doing this by some sort of outside entity. In terms of, you know, any changes that will be made, I would have the National Labor Relations Act clarified just simply to provide more guarantees for the rights of individual workers to make up their own minds mm-hmm. and sort of avoid these type of situations we're talking about where the pressure is coming from outside, not inside. But, you know, I mean, on the whole, I do think it has been a good thing. Even I say this to somebody who represents a free market think tank. I mean, workers have the right to, you know, to speak for themselves and to speak up for themselves and to, you know, to represent themselves and to make demands on management. That's part of the process, and it is one of the things that makes our system better. I certainly wouldn't want the workers not to have a voice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And of course, then there's the situation where overall, as we look at unions and their strength, it seems like their strength has waned, you know, through the generations since the 30s. We now have right-to-work states, and it seems like there's less constriction on an individual worker in terms of whether or not he would be forced to join a union. And then there's also the talk that some unions, especially when you look at possibly teachers' unions and others like that, get in the way of making a good product. There's always been that discussion as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem, it comes down to the fact that a lot of these sort of unions exist on their own as sort of separate entities from the workers. In other words, your workplace could be unionized before you get there, and you're obligated to join the union, and then you leave, and the union still exists. At no point would you have had any sort of chance of voting on whether or not you wanted to be represented or how you wanted to be represented or that type of stuff. And it's that sort of separation from you know, what the individual worker wants and what the sort of union wants, that's the problem. Because when the union exists to represent the workers, but oftentimes you get these situations where the sort of the workers kind of exist to serve the union, in a sense. And that's sort of the problem. I mean, you see this in the case of the teachers' unions, where you have a lot of these sort of leaders who don't really, I think, oftentimes represent what a lot of rank-and-file teachers necessarily want, but there's nothing that rank-and-file teachers can do. Most of the schools are already organized, and so they're just sort of obligated to join once they do. In a sense, the broader problem of decline is also tied into this. I mean, the unions just aren't as democratic as they should be. Because they don't have to periodically sort of recertify and reestablish the fact that they're representing the current interests of the workers that are currently there. They just tend to sort of go off on their own and do their own sort of thing. and not focus so much on the workers. If, on the other hand, there was the periodic possibility that the unions would be just sort of dissolved because the workers decide that it's not representing them, then they would be more inclined to sort of focus specifically on workers' issues and their concerns and not so much on outside political things that aren't necessarily the workers' concerns. I don't think there's a worker on an assembly line in Detroit today who ever had an opportunity to vote on whether or not they want to be represented by the United Auto Workers. And that's been a union that's had some serious troubles in recent years, including several, presidents who are now, who were convicted of corruption. I mean, there's a serious sort of endemic problem there. And if the union was forced to sort of more often represent, to focus on what the individual workers do and not so much what the leadership of the union itself is concerned with, then they wouldn't have had this problem in the first place. And these declines are basically this fact that the workers just don't feel as though the unions are directly representing them anymore, so why bother?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, it's a, especially here on a Labor Day weekend, the idea of the ability to organize and the ability to be collectively represented is part of Americana. And
yes.
Sean, I want to thank you so very much for taking time on this Labor Day weekend to talk about this. I really appreciate it. Look forward to talking with you again.
Thanks for having me. Good morning, Tampa.
Always our pleasure. Thank you. Sean Higgins of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Okay, we're going to take our break. When we come back, newly released documents show a tight relationship between then-Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter's private business dealings, to the point Joe using fake email names. Wow, we're going to talk about it.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Our FreedomWorks radio show has been proud these many years to be sponsored by what I think is the best men's barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. You'll get exactly the cut you desire and get it at the best price in Pinellas County. The staff is expert in quality haircuts, and the shop is always clean, sparkling, and attractive. And Andrew's Master Barbershop is easy to get to, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They're open Tuesdays through Saturdays, so men, call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Do you have fallen trees or damage from Hurricane Idalia? Call ArborLife Tree Service at 727-330-1999. We are a veteran-owned Florida business with an ISA-certified arborist on site to handle your tree needs. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. We are licensed, insured, and have the manpower to come to your rescue today. No job too big or too small. Call us now at 727-330-1999. That's 727-330-1999. Your trees will thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on a Labor Day weekend. Hey, by the way, Hurricane Idalia. I was sitting in the house worried sick, was going to lose my electric power. I was worried about water and flooding. And to be honest with you, Ed, things were very, were pretty doggone good where I live.
Well, that's a good thing, though.
It was. I want to ask you here, we're close to the intercoastal waters here at the radio station. How was it?
Never lost power, never lost internet. I think Tuesday morning was a little dicey. You could tell that's when a lot of it started to roll in Tuesday morning. Mm-hmm. Actually, maybe it was Wednesday morning. I'm sorry.
Was there any flooding that you saw?
No. None at all.
No kidding.
Now, the beaches did flood. Now, I just read that the Clearwater Hyatt on Clearwater Beach is in big trouble. They told their guests there is no evacuation. Stay put. You're fine. In the hotel.
Yes.
They were putting out emails and notes under doors saying you're fine. There's no evacuation. They're in big trouble.
Because there was flooding there, and there
Well, no, there was an evacuation. Nobody was allowed on the beach.
That's right. It would be what we call an A zone here, mm-hmm. which is the first zone that we will evacuate.
Yeah, they're in big trouble.
Wow. So there's some legal trouble out.
Okay. Yeah. Imagine being on vacation and then having to evacuate, go get a hotel room somewhere else.
I know. Maybe that's what they were worried about. Well, I want to also ask, the Master Barber is joining us. Andrew, the Master Barber. Andrew, was there any kind of trouble in your neck of the woods with Hurricane Idalia?
The only trouble it made for me, Paul, is it got me painting my house now.
Oh, really?
Because it took me about 5 hours to get everything out of my pool area and around the house and this and that. And I did that, and I slept through the night and ended up sleeping through the day on Tuesday because there was nothing else to do.
Yeah.
And or Wednesday. And now I figured I got everything off of the walls. I'm painting the outside of my house. So all it did for me was make me more work.
Well, for goodness sakes. Oh, that's too bad. Well, you know, you're a busy kind of a guy. But we were very lucky, weren't we? I mean, let's face it. Tampa has always, just like things will brush by us, you know. Now, I know there was flooding because I saw some flooding, for instance, in around the Bay Area. And certainly, wasn't there in Clearwater Beach? There must have been some flooding along Clearwater.
Oh, sure. All the Gulf Boulevard.
Yeah,
is
Gulf Boulevard.
Paul,
yep.
I got my own theory about why we don't get hit that often.
Okay.
And it's got to be because we live by Tampa Bay. The temperature of the water in the bay is usually a little different than in the Gulf because it's a smaller area. And for some reason, I think that the bay pushes it away from us.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Oh.
Look, that's where the Indians lived, wasn't it?
Well, I was going to say it might have been that the Indians gave us a little bit of a lucky charm.
Well, you got to realize that the Indians, every time a hurricane came in, they thought their gods were mad at them, you know?
Yeah.
But they ended up living off of Felipe Park. They got the Indian mount there, and they lived right on the bay. So they might have sensed that that was the safest place after moving from area to area.
Well, once again, as I say, we seem to have skirted a lot of it. It went up there and racked up in the Tallahassee area pretty badly, and then it hit parts of Georgia and I guess South Carolina.
Yeah, you know, Paul, the hurricane is gone. We don't need to waste our time talking
about that.
We need to talk about the politics that are going on.
All right, let's do it.
The unemployment rate is so low. If the unemployment rate is so low, how come everybody's moaning?
Well, it's because everything costs so much. That's what everybody's moaning about.
And what I want to know is what are the jobs that they have out there? Are they production jobs or are they service jobs?
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, this country has turned into a service industry. We don't manufacture anything. We service everybody. Everybody comes to America on vacation. We're all waiters, waitresses, barbers, and undertakers.
Yeah,
you know?
Especially in Florida. You know, Florida has been a service economy for a long time. We're not like a manufacturing hub in Florida.
That's right. Well, where I'm from, the manufacturing, I mean, Rochester is a big industrial city.
So,
that's why it's desolate. We don't manufacture nothing.
Yeah, I came from Chicago with all the manufacturing jobs that were going on there. And look how much they've lost.
It's all gone.
No question about it. Yeah, it's a different world now. Do you think... let's get to the presidential election. If Donald Trump were reelected president, would this be a good thing for manufacturing jobs in the United States?
Paul, I think it'd be a great thing for any job in the United States, okay? This guy will get either put big tariffs on the products coming in this country, which he did with China. We had billions of dollars coming in. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
Why should all the money go to China?
Right.
These idiots, the administration now, they took the tariffs off. They're trying to bring in everything you want. We'll give you the ships. You know, China Joe, that's his nickname, isn't it?
Yeah. It should be if it's not.
Okay.
So you would call President Trump a little bit more of a protective type. In other words, protective of American jobs, right?
Listen, this guy is America first, period. Period. Trump put everything ahead of every other country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had somebody come in the other day saying, well, you know, Biden's doing as much for Maui as Trump did for Puerto Rico. I said, listen, number one, Puerto Rico is not a state. It's a territory. Number two, Puerto Rico had its opportunity to become a state a couple of times. And what did they say? They don't want no part of it. So why should we have taken care of them completely?
Right.
Yeah, but he took care of Puerto Rico, but Puerto Rico's government is so corrupt that they stole all that stuff. They were selling that stuff on the black market.
Of course. There's no question about it.
The citizens of Puerto Rico did not get any of that.
I mean,
no, they didn't get nothing.
That island was all screwed up before the hurricane hit them.
Yeah, it still is.
That's right. So yeah. Why should, even though he took care of them, now Maui's a whole other story. Hawaii's considered a state. Okay, and I know Ed will argue with me, but even the people there are wondering what went on, okay? I mean, you see it every day on there.
Now, something has developed that bothers me. I don't know if you know, but all around the area of that city that was hit, there have gone a fence has gone up with black tarp around it. In other
That's
words,
right.
A 6-foot fence. You're not, there's National Guard all along the fence. You're not allowed to stop and look over the fence or take photos or anything like that. They shoo you away.
Something, you're talking about
Maui? I mean, here's the problem. When you create secrecy, it becomes some sort of a conspiracy.
Yeah, well, people start to think there's a conspiracy going on.
Well, you know, they're talking about building smart cities in areas. And it seems that all these areas that are having fires are where they want to put smart cities.
Let me ask you about Ron DeSantis and his reaction. I think Florida, once again, is probably going to be held up in high regard. And DeSantis probably gets some kudos for the way he handled Hurricane Idalia. He was very visible, very available. I saw him on television all the time. You know, he basically suspended his presidential campaign to come back and make sure that things were being done right. And it seems like things were done right in this state, which I think probably helps him a little bit in his presidential ambitions.
Well, Paul, he's a great governor at this point. Don't get me wrong. But he can't turn this country around. There's only one person that can.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Yeah,
it might bump him up a point or two, but that's about it.
That'll be it.
Yeah, I was wondering... With this Biden thing, how soon does it become too late for another candidate to bounce in? Because, I mean, you have to set it all up. You need funding.
That's true.
I mean, at what point...
You have to get on the ballot.
In other words, at what point is it all Biden or nothing for them?
Well, we got what? This is September the 1st. That means that we've got another year plus...
A month, two months.
Two months. We got, what, 14 months until the election.
So here's my prediction, guys. Now, you know I've taken care of a few people on their deathbed, right?
Yes, you have.
Okay, did you see Mitch McConnell the other day?
Are you going to take care of him, too?
Okay, now, Mitch McConnell, if you looked at him a month ago when he had his first incident,
mm-hmm.
Look at his features. Look at him.
Yeah, I know what you're talking
now,
about.
Now, look at the month later. 1 month. His face is caved
in. It looks like he suffered
a
stroke.
He's pale as a ghost, and he's on his way out. He's a dying man. Mark my words, if he's got 2 months left on this earth, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
From everything I've ever experienced and seen, the way his body looks, he's on his way out. You look at his face, pale, all caving in.
You think that's going to matter when he dies?
No,
they'll just tell us he's got a cold.
Yeah, I know that. And then, you know, you're going to see right behind him, I'm going to say within 8 months, because Biden's under a lot of stress right now. Okay,
yeah,
he's under a lot of stress. Stress is a killer. I don't care who you are.
Yeah,
especially at that age.
At the start of our show, Andrew, I don't know if you heard it, but we were talking about this whole situation with McConnell and with Dianne Feinstein and with Fetterman, which is not an age issue. He has a mental condition, unfortunately. But age has become a big thing. You know, even, let's be honest, Donald Trump is 77 years old. I mean, you know, he's great right now. I mean, he's amazing. He's got the agility and the mind of a person half his age.
Well, Paul, this is another thing I'll tell you.
Something like this could, but at his age, you never know.
Well, this is true, but I could tell you this. You know, I have a lot of old men coming in my barbershop.
I wouldn't know about that.
I see men my age, 68 years old, coming in that look like they're 80.
True.
Okay, and I have seen 85-year-olds come in. They're in the same physical shape that I'm in.
Yeah, and you're in pretty good shape.
And I can tell you that Trump is one of these people. The guy never drank in his life. He never smoked in his life. Yeah, something can happen at anybody's age. Don't get me wrong. But as far as him going down slowly, I don't think you'll see that with him.
Yeah.
When he goes, he's just going to go.
Mm-hmm.
You understand
because
what I'm saying?
He'll be like in his early 80s if he becomes president. You know what I mean? If he serves out the first term, he's going to be like 78 when he becomes president. And he'd be
82
like
82 when he's over.
And he might be 82 towards the end of his term.
However, I've seen 85-year-old men, Paul.
I agree with this. I agree with you.
And he's one of these. Until they can prove it wrong, forget about it. Right. Biden couldn't walk before he became president.
He was
losing it, okay? And in the time that's gone on, his dementia, Alzheimer's, whatever he's got is really kicking in. Trump doesn't have these problems yet.
Do you think Biden is really going to be the candidate running?
No, the Democrats don't even want him. Let me tell you something. It'll be the Democrats to get rid of him, not the Republicans.
Might be
the Republicans
right.
aren't doing nothing. The Democrats are going to get rid of him.
So who do you think is going to be the Democratic candidate?
Newsom.
Okay, that's fair.
I think you may be right.
Yeah.
And I got news for you. Trump will destroy Newsom.
Mm-hmm.
He'll mop the floor with him.
What about Kennedy?
The Democrats are too stupid to put him in. He'd be the best candidate they could ever have, but they're too stupid.
He's not far enough to the left. I thought he was running already.
He is running.
Well, he is running. He's a Democrat.
Who cares what the Democrats want? If the people want him in, they'll put him in.
Yeah, that's true. Do you think that Biden will debate Kennedy? That would be very interesting. I don't think Biden will debate Kennedy.
There'll be no debating. No way.
He can't debate a dog.
He can't figure out which end of the stage is. He can't figure out which end of the stage is the exit.
That's what I'm saying. No, the Democrats are in turmoil right now. That's why they're trying to do everything they can with Trump. And it's all going to fall back on him. The name, what's the name, Annie Fanny there in Georgia?
She's trying
to make a name for herself. However, the name she's going to get isn't going to be what she thinks it's going to be.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is all going to turn on them, Paul. Listen, I was watching the news the other night, and they showed the gangster blacks. Okay, blacks. Once they took Trump's mugshot, he's one of us, brother. He's one of us now. They even put him in the Fulton County Jail.
Well,
they're backing Trump, buddy.
There is a lot of black people that have decided that they finally seeing the light with the Democratic Party and how they have been taken advantage of. Finally, after generations and generations, there's a goodly percentage of blacks, and I agree with you, that are now becoming much more conservative and possibly Republican.
And I'll tell you why I think. Okay? Now, the majority of the blacks in this country are African blacks, right?
African Americans, yes.
Yeah, African Americans.
Yeah, slaves.
Now, the blacks that are coming in are different countries. They're not African black.
Mm-hmm. They could be Caribbean blacks or South American.
That's right. Yeah. They see the Democrats giving them everything and not the American Afro-Americans anything. So they're afraid that they're taken away from them.
I see what you mean. So there's the American blacks are becoming a little bit jealous of what some of the others coming in across
right.
the border. Yeah,
that's right.
Well,
they're upset.
Yeah. No, I agree. I can see what you mean by that.
Don't forget the millions of illegal aliens by the time that we get 14 months away from electing a new president.
Yeah. Well, most of the people coming across the southern border, quite frankly, I think have somewhat conservative ideals, and I'm not sure that they would stay Democrats. They might start out for a while.
I think, Paul, the people that are coming across as immigrants right now, I don't think they have the knowledge or the know-how to even understand what's going on.
No, they don't care about voting, that's for sure. Not at this point.
They're going to see what they can get, and then look at what's going on in New York now. Paul, you're going to see a revolution in New York. The people in New York are angry as can be.
There's also going on in Massachusetts. They're getting that way, too, with the Boston area. Yeah. No, there's a lot of places that are like that right now. They're fed up.
Paul, that's why I'm telling you. It's all going to turn on. Everything they think they're doing, I got news for them. It is going to turn on them like they ever seen.
Yeah, you may be right. Andrew, I hope you have a wonderful Labor Day weekend. We will be back on the air on Wednesday. We're going to take Monday off. But thank you, my friend. Enjoy the weekend. And I know you're going to be doing some painting. I hope the weather is conducive for that.
You got it, buddy. You take care. You guys have a good holiday.
Thank you, my friend. All right, we're going to take our break, and when we come back, we're still going to talk about Biden and all those crazy email pseudonyms he's using.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you have fallen trees or damage from Hurricane Idalia? Call ArborLife Tree Service at 727-330-1999. We are a veteran-owned Florida business with an ISA-certified arborist on site to handle your tree needs. Don't trust just anyone with a chainsaw. We are licensed, insured, and have the manpower to come to your rescue today. No job too big or too small. Call us now at 727-330-1999. That's 727-330-1999. Your trees will thank you.
Our FreedomWorks radio show has been proud these many years to be sponsored by what I think is the best men's barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. You'll get exactly the cut you desire and get it at the best price in Pinellas County. The staff is expert in quality haircuts, and the shop is always clean, sparkling, and attractive. And Andrew's Master Barbershop is easy to get to, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They're open Tuesdays through Saturdays, so men, call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back. Freedom Works, Paul Molloy. We're here usually Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Wednesday, because of the Hurricane Idalia, we were not here. We are here today. Monday's Labor Day. We're going to take that day off. But Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Tantalk Radio Network. If you can't listen live, thanks to Ed, go to our website, ourfreedomworks.com. Click on the podcast button. Ed's got all our shows on there for you. O-U-R, ourfreedomworks.com. All right, so... boy, oh boy, good old Joe Biden. According to emails from Hunter Biden's laptop, then Vice President Biden apparently used a pseudonym to discuss a future White House hire with Hunter. This was an email in 2014, and Hunter emailed a guy by the name of Robin Ware, W-A-R-E, Robin Ware, from his company. And at that time, Hunter's company was Rosemont Seneca Partners. You might recall that Joe Biden apparently claims he knows nothing about what his son has been doing. But Robin Ware knew something about it. Here's what Hunter said to Robin Ware. Before you fill the position for this particular spot, please talk to me. And a response minutes later from the email account of Robin Ware said, regarding Johnny, that's the one they wanted to talk about, call me right away, Dad. Robin Ware is one of several pseudonyms Biden used during his vice presidency to discuss government matters with Hunter Biden, according to Republicans that are looking into this whole thing. There were some other names that he used as well, but the more that the documents come out, the more we see that there is a connection between Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. So there you go. All right. Before we do our top 10, which we think is a good one for you, I want to ask Ed. Ed, do we have any exhibition football?
No.
We're taking a break, and next week?
Next week it starts.
We start the regular season?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So are we set as far as the Bucs go with our quarterback?
Looks like it.
Okay.
Be Baker Mayfield. So
Baker Mayfield, all right.
We'll head up to Minnesota and see what happens.
And we're starting in Minnesota. Uh-huh. All right. How are our beloved Rays?
The Rays are, let's see, they just swept a two-game series with Miami.
Oh.
Had the day off last night, and tonight they'll be in Cleveland.
Okay.
So they're a game and a half right now behind Baltimore for the top spot.
So they're getting a little bit closer to the top again.
Yeah, but I know there's the cliche, you can't win them all. But by golly, when you're playing a really bad team, you try to win them all. Because when it comes down to like this scenario, you're one game back.
Yeah.
There's always that one game you blew.
Right.
You know, that comes back to haunt.
Well, all I got to tell you is that the name for the Cleveland baseball team scares me, the Guardians.
You know, if the Washington,
very scary name.
If the Washington Commanders go back to the Redskins, I'd like to see the Indians go back. I mean, the Guardians,
go back to the Indians. Yeah, all right. There you go. All right. It is time for the top 10 largest unions in the United States. We decided to find out what they were on behalf of this Labor Day weekend. So here we go. The top 10 largest American unions. Number 10, Laborers International Union of North America. That's what they are. They are miscellaneous construction workers. They've got about 670,000 members, and they were formed in 1903. Number 9, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW, is number 9. They have 705,000 members right now. Huh. And they do manufacturing with electrical, utility, and the like. And they were formed in 1891. Number 8, the American Federation of Teachers, formed in 1916. They've got about 829,000 members, all right? These are public school teachers. Number 7. The United Steelworkers.
Mm-hmm, that's a big one.
That's a biggie. 860,000 plus. These are steel mill workers and related trades. They were formed in 1942. Number 6. The UAW, the United Auto Workers. They've got about 990,000 members. That's a lot still. And they were formed in 1935. Number 5. The United Food and Commercial Workers. 1,300,000 members. Wow. Big service company. This is retail store and distribution employees. Formed in 1979. Number 4. Aha, the Teamsters. Mm-hmm. The truckers, right? 1.4 million. International Brotherhood of Teamsters is their full name. Truck drivers, warehouse workers, and miscellaneous trades. They were formed in 1903. Number 3. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Workers. They used to be called ASCME, but anyway, AFSCME. They've got 1.5 million employees. These are state, county, and municipal government workers. And they were formed in 1932. Number 2, the Service Employees International Union. And these are professional, technical, and non-professional healthcare workers, public employees, janitorial, and security employees, 1.9 million. And they were formed in 1921. All right, Ed, you want to take a guess at what the largest union is?
That? Let's see. Is it the ACLU? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
American Civil Liberties Union. All right.
No.
But it was a good guess. It's the National Education Association.
So is that NEA, all the teachers?
This is another group of teachers. Listen to this. They've got 3 million.
Wow.
And they were formed in 1857. That was a long time ago. They've been around a long time. All right. Thanks so much for listening. Going to take Monday off. Have a wonderful Labor Day weekend. We'll be back Wednesday. Remember, freedom works.
Well, oh, south side of Chicago. Town. And if you go down